The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Diane Edelman for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Reader's Digest. Our first article, Paying Attention to Adult ADHD. New awareness and diagnostic tools are helping more of us understand how our brains work, by Melissa Greer. Growing up, Suzanne Smith always thought she was dyslexic or had some sort of learning disorder. The Baltimore, Maryland-based artist says she daydreamed during class and doodled on her work, eventually falling behind. She was clumsy, often breaking things or making a mess. Throughout her childhood, she was called quirky and eccentric, traits that people would attribute to her creative personality. I found different ways to cope and just accepted that this is me, she says. But eventually, it got to the point where I was really not functioning well, and my relationship with my husband was taking a hit. Smith describes herself as disorganized and says she finds it hard to focus, making everyday household tasks like cooking and cleaning very challenging for her. It's an unfair division of labor, and that was resulting in a resentment, she says. Smith began doing some research online and reached out to the University of Maryland Psychology Clinic, which offers sliding fee scale mental health evaluations. After undergoing an assessment there in August 2024, she was diagnosed with Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, ADHD, at the age of 54. She's now part of a growing number of people who have been diagnosed with ADHD as adults. A recent Centers for Disease Control and Prevention report found that in 2023, an estimated 15.5 million adults in the United States, about 6%, had ADHD. Of those, roughly half had received their diagnosis in adulthood. ADHD diagnoses among adults have been rising over the last two decades, but in 2020, when many of us were spending more time online, the number of adults seeking treatment sharply increased. What happened, say experts, is that millions of adults whose symptoms had been missed or misdiagnosed in childhood were suddenly seeing themselves represented in TikTok videos, Facebook memes, and Instagram ads. Adults with undiagnosed ADHD are more likely to have relationship problems, they're less likely to achieve the same academic and employment levels, and they're more likely to use substances, says Leonard Adler, MD, professor of psychiatry and director of the Adult ADHD Program at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. Missing this diagnosis and not treating ADHD has serious consequences, both for individuals and for society. And those bearing the burden of a missed diagnosis are overwhelmingly women and marginalized groups. Growing up, I was told regularly that I had an attitude problem, says Laura Gallant, a Toronto-based website developer who struggled throughout school and was eventually diagnosed with ADHD in 2021 at the age of 34. It wasn't an attitude problem. I'm just a woman with ADHD, she says. The good news is that millions of people, mostly women, who once slipped through the cracks are finally getting the help they need. A 2023 study from Epic Research, an organization that analyzes medical record data, found that the number of women newly diagnosed with ADHD nearly doubled from 2020 to 2022. ADHD is a developmental disorder that begins in childhood and comes in three types: inattentive, hyperactive/impulsive, and combined. Symptoms of the inattentive type include poor listening skills, avoidance of tasks that require concentration, and being easily sidetracked. Symptoms of the hyperactive impulsive type include restlessness, an inability to wait your turn, and being overly talkative. People can be diagnosed with one type. Most have a combination of symptoms of both types. Until recently, ADHD was largely considered a childhood disorder, most often associated with boys who couldn't sit still in class. But experts now know that symptoms don't just go away as we grow up. The most recent data shows that about 90% of children with ADHD still have some form of it as adults, says Margaret Sibley, PhD, a licensed clinical psychologist at the Seattle Children's Hospital and a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the University of Washington School of Medicine. It's not something that most people grow out of. Neuroscientists believe that brains with ADHD have lower levels of dopamine and norepinephrine, two key neurotransmitters that support executive function, the set of skills we rely on to manage our emotions, thoughts, and actions. Imaging studies on ADHD brains have also found disruptions in the neural networks. These groups of neurons, form networks that send signals throughout the brain. But in an ADHD brain, these networks are disrupted, making it difficult for messages to pass through. Basically, an ADHD brain is wired differently than a neurotypical brain. There's a genetic component as well. Someone with ADHD often has a family history of the disorder, explains Sibley. Diagnosis involves a thorough assessment from a professional, which can include interviews with the patient and parents or other family members. There needs to be some level of impairment in that symptoms are interfering with the person's ability to function. And because ADHD is a developmental disorder, symptoms must trace back to childhood, specifically before the age of 12. In adults, that means clinicians have to work to establish what the person was like as a child, says Sibley, which can be challenging if the person is older. Treatment options include cognitive behavioral therapy, a type of talk-based psychotherapy that helps people understand and change their thought and behavior patterns, and medications. Stimulant medications, such as Adderall and Ritalin, work by increasing levels of dopamine and norepinephrine in the brain, which in turn helps improve the ability to stay focused. Non-stimulant medications also work by increasing levels of norepinephrine and have fewer side effects, but may take longer to start working than stimulants. ADHD affects both genders equally, but boys have historically been diagnosed at 3 to 4 times the rate of girls, says Joshua Langbird, PhD, a licensed clinical psychologist, professor of psychology, and director of the Rutgers Center for Youth Social Emotional Wellness. We now know that this difference is probably due to an identification issue and not an actual biological or inheritability issue, he says. That's because boys tend to exhibit more hyperactive symptoms, such as being unable to sit still, talking out, and being disruptive. Girls, on the other hand, are generally more inattentive, making their symptoms easier to miss. You might see someone who is quiet, distracted, or in their own thoughts, and in a classroom with 25 to 30 students, that's not really a problem, explains Langbird. Lindsay Crockford and her brother both have ADHD, but their experience with the disorder couldn't be more different. Crockford's brother was diagnosed decades ago at the age of 8, while she was not diagnosed until last year at the age of 32. In my brother, it's very obvious. He's very hyperactive, while I'm more inattentive, says Crockford. As a child, Crockford says she felt discouraged when it came to school, and she just couldn't sit down to focus and study when she needed to. Once she entered the workforce, she found herself losing chunks of time, not meeting deadlines, and daydreaming a lot at work. Today, Crockford, who lives in Seattle, is feeling more confident, since she now knows what works for her and how to manage her day. But the diagnosis also brought up feelings of disappointment. I thought about all the projects I had started and never followed through on. If only I knew how my brain worked, I could have accomplished more, she says. It's not uncommon for people who have gone undiagnosed to have feelings of shame or low self-esteem, says Judith Joseph, MD, a board-certified psychiatrist and author of High Functioning, Overcome Hidden Depression and Reclaim Your Joy. When you go your entire life without getting the support that you need, it creates a lot of stress. All this new attention is largely a positive thing, but the influx of user-generated ADHD content online is also thought to have created a broader definition of the disorder than what is medically accepted. Essentially, people began equating being distracted and unable to concentrate with ADHD, when diagnosis isn't nearly that simple. The messaging that was coming through a lot of people's social media at that time, a time when stress was high, a lot of structure and support had been taken away, and people weren't feeling their best, was this idea that the explanation for that could be undiagnosed ADHD, says Sibley. The ads were relatable. After all, who doesn't have trouble focusing these days? Between 2021 and 2023, ADHD views on TikTok grew from 2 billion to more than 20 billion. Around the same time, Google searches for ADHD and focus with ADHD surged. During that period, the United States experienced a shortage of several ADHD medications, including Adderall and Vyvanse. At the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, people were unable to see their doctors in person, so telehealth companies stepped in to fill that gap. At the same time, the government suspended a prior requirement that a practitioner have at least one in-person medical evaluation with a patient before issuing them a prescription. Some telehealth companies weren't as thorough as they should have been in their diagnostic assessments, says Sibley, explaining that a quick checklist isn't enough to make an ADHD diagnosis. At least two telehealth companies have been investigated for their actions in the last few years. In June of last year, two executives at Doan, a California-based telehealth company, were indicted on healthcare fraud charges that included prescribing ADHD medications, particularly Adderall, to patients when not medically necessary. There are no shortcuts in making a diagnosis in adult ADHD, says Dr. Adler. Screeners can identify someone who is at risk, but that doesn't confirm a diagnosis. Nothing replaces taking a comprehensive developmental history and looking back at their childhood, be that done on telemedicine or in person. Both Sibley and Dr. Adler are part of a task force created by the American Professional Society of ADHD and Related Disorders, APSARD, to develop new guidelines for the diagnosis and treatment of ADHD in adults. The new guidelines are expected to be released in mid to late 2025. The hope is that these guidelines establish consistency in how healthcare providers around the country approach diagnosis and treatment, ensuring patients receive an accurate diagnosis and the best treatment to improve their quality of life. Ensuring that you or someone you love is accurately assessed for ADHD starts with talking to a trusted medical professional about your concerns. A good provider will treat it like it's a collaboration with you. They won't just tell you what you have. They'll have a two-way conversation with you about what's been going on, says Sibley. Your doctor will work with you to find the right treatment, which could be a combination of medication and cognitive behavioral therapy, as well as sleep hygiene and good nutrition, says Dr. Joseph, explaining that sleep and nutrition are often overlooked in ADHD treatment. Both will support brain health, which may in turn improve your executive functioning, making it easier to manage symptoms. Aim for at least 8 hours of sleep and try to eat plenty of foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids, such as fish and nuts, as well as micronutrients like zinc, iron, and vitamin D. Establishing a routine has been an important tool for Crockford. Her psychiatrist recommended cognitive behavioral therapy as well as some organizational techniques to help her set a schedule that works for her. After keeping a daily record of how she was spending her time, Crockford says she was able to see when she experienced periods of ADHD paralysis, the times when she was most overwhelmed, procrastinating, and simply unable to focus. That knowledge has allowed her to be more proactive in planning her days. I realized it tends to happen around the same time of day, so now I make sure that everything I need to do that's important falls within my productive hours, she says. Crockford is also more aware of the types of work environments that she performs best in. Open concept floor plans make it even more difficult for her to focus, so she'll use a noise-canceling headphone and try to avoid distractions as best she can. Dr. Joseph is hopeful that in the future, workplaces will become more accommodating for people with ADHD. She notes that these accommodations exist for children and students, but virtually disappear once a person becomes an adult, a time when they're taking on more responsibilities and need that support more than ever. People in general are now more aware of these differences in thinking and behaviors that are not neurotypical, says Dr. Joseph. Because of that, and the stories that are shared on social media, it has humanized the differences in individuals, and we're moving toward a more accepting environment. Since getting her ADHD diagnosis, Smith is also feeling hopeful about the future. I'm willing to do whatever needs to happen, she says. I'm 54, but that doesn't mean I'm too old. I want a new life. I'm ready. That was Paying Attention to Adult ADHD by Melissa Greer. And now a second article. Warning, this fruit may orbisculate. Two siblings honor their father by trying to get his made-up word into the dictionary, by Sadie Dingfelder. In the early aughts, Hillary Krieger was sitting in her parents' Boston home when her friend accidentally squirted himself with an orange slice. I said, "Oh, the orange just orbisculated," she recalls. And he said, "It did what?" The two made a $5 bet, and Hillary gleefully grabbed the family dictionary. She flipped to the O section and stared at the spot on the page where orbisculate should have been. "My first thought was, what's wrong with this dictionary?" she says. Aghast, Hillary burst into her dad's study and told him the shocking news. Orbisculate was somehow not in the dictionary. And he looked kind of sheepish. And that's when I found out that he had made up this word when he was in college and had just been using it our whole lives as if it were a real word, Hillary says. He'd always defined it as when you dig your spoon into a grapefruit and it squirts juice directly into your eye, she says, though the family also applied it to other fruits and vegetables that unexpectedly spritzed. Out $5 and wondering what other fake words might be lurking in her vocabulary, Hillary was mad at the time. But she quickly came to see her dad's made-up word as a gift, one that encapsulated his mischievous and inventive spirit. It speaks to his creativity and the idea that even when something's painful and annoying, like getting grapefruit juice in your eye, you can laugh and have fun with it. 2 decades later, Hillary found herself telling that funny story again and again in some very sad circumstances. Her father, Neil Krieger, died of complications from COVID-19 in April 2020 at age 78. Since the Kriegers couldn't have a proper funeral, Hillary, who now lives in New York City, spent a lot of time on the phone talking with friends and family, and the orbisculate story kept coming up. I began to think orbisculate is such a great word. It should be in the dictionary, says Hillary, an editor. Hillary, 44, called her brother Jonathan Krieger, 36, who lives in Boston and runs an online trivia company, and together they hatched an elaborate plan to get the word officially recognized. Their goal is to put the word to use publicly enough that it has a chance of becoming legitimate. Getting a word into the dictionary isn't easy, but the Kriegers' 78-point plan, as described on their website, orbisculate.com, is spot on. Encouraging people to use orbisculate in a wide variety of contexts, such as in comic strips, news stories, and the name of a Ben & Jerry's sorbet flavor, will leave a compelling trail of evidence for lexicographers to follow. Merriam-Webster adds about 1,000 new words to its master database every year, words that then trickle down to the company's print and online dictionaries. The batch of new words, released in January 2021, is heavy on pandemic-related vocabulary, such as long hauler and pod. Editors at the dictionary's Whisper Quiet office in Springfield, Massachusetts, scour newspapers, academic journals, books, and even cartoon captions for new words. What we're looking for is usage in publications with a large and broad readership, says senior editor Emily Brewster. Brewster and her colleagues generally track words for years or even decades before nominating them for dictionary status. This ensures that flash-in-the-pan coinages, think Will Smith's use of jiggy to mean trendy, briefly popular in the 90s, can't sneak in. But if a word really takes off, it can quickly become official. The word that has the record for the most quickly entering the dictionary is COVID-19, at 34 days, Brewster says. The term before that was AIDS. In addition to diseases, words that describe concrete phenomena that affect many people tend to get picked up quickly. That's one of the things Orbisculate has going for it. There is no single word that captures the squirting in the eye that certain fruits do, she says. If the Kriegers accomplish all the goals they outline in their website, the word's status as an established member of the English language would be pretty irrefutable, Brewster says. But to make it all happen, they need help from friends and strangers. Even if they don't succeed in getting the word added to the dictionary, the Kriegers project may still accomplish something important. Perhaps just trying will help buffer them against some of the feelings of despair and hopelessness that have struck many families who lost loved ones to the coronavirus, says psychologist Robert A. Niemeyer, PhD, director of the Portland Institute for Loss and Transition. Among the many reasons that virus-related grief has proved especially shattering is that social distancing separated mourners from their friends and family. This family has come up with a creative way of memorializing their father by building a community around this thing that's distinctive about him, Niemeyer says. That community, which the Kriegers named Orbisculation Nation, even has a uniform of sorts, a citrus-festooned T-shirt. Friends of the Kriegers often take pictures of themselves wearing their T-shirts and send the images via text messages to Hillary and Johnson. Just to have that reminder that there are people who are thinking about you and who care about you helps a lot, says Jonathan. The Orbisculation Nation is also helping the Kriegers check off items on their list for Orbisculation domination. One family friend went rogue and put a homemade Orbisculation warning sign on a pile of clementines in a grocery store, goal number 16. People the Kriegers don't know personally, but who were inspired by the campaign, used the word in an online crossword puzzle, goal number 1, and a homemade cartoon, goal number 25. And when the Because Language podcast announced online voting to determine its word of the year, the Orbisculation Nation put its favorite word over the top. It's such a good word. It might have won even without the online campaign, says podcast host Daniel Midgley. Orbisculate felt like a refreshing splash of citrus in an otherwise grim year of words, he says. It has been more than a year since Neil's death, and his children are still reeling from the loss. But their campaign to get their father's word into the dictionary has helped them recapture a little of the joy that has been missing from their lives. I could picture him being really excited, Jonathan says. He'd say, "It's dynamite," and that's the thing he always used to say. That was Warning, This Fruit May Orbisculate, by Sadie Dingfelder. And now a very short piece from the world of medicine. Weekend warriors, take heart. If you're too busy during the week to sleep and exercise as much as you intend, here's some good news. Catching up on sleep and physical activity on the weekend can be very beneficial. Chinese researchers at the National Center for Cardiovascular Diseases looked at data from more than 90,000 people and found that those who got the most additional shut-eye on the weekend had a 19% lower chance of developing heart disease compared with people who got the least amount of weekend sleep. Another study at Massachusetts General Hospital found that weekend warriors, people who squeezed the recommended weekly amount of exercise into 1 or 2 days, benefited from the same reduced risk of disease as people who spread their workouts over many days. And another short one from the same column, sparkling or still. If you're trying to lose weight, drinking carbonated water might help your efforts at least a little. New Japanese research suggests that carbonated water may help promote weight loss by lowering blood glucose levels and helping keep blood sugar levels stable. Without large spikes or dips to blood sugar, the body can burn fat more efficiently. While the scientists say that sparkling water alone is unlikely to lead to significant weight loss, it can't hurt to add some to your daily routine, since every little bit helps. And finally, another short piece from Best Pet Pals, Gripper the Class Turtle. In 1993, a student at my wife's elementary school brought in a box turtle he'd found in the wild. My wife agreed to keep Gripper as a pet for her second grade class. The classroom was already decorated like a park with a bench, artificial trees, and a pond with a working fountain, so a turtle fit right in. Gripper got her name because she'd grip students' hands when they picked her up and crane her neck out instead of retreating into her shell. Taking care of Gripper's enclosure became the most coveted classroom job. After decades of teaching, my wife retired. Gripper is a house turtle now, spending her days scuttling around our deck, scratching at doors she'd like us to open, and pushing around her food dish when she's hungry. Gripper is the first thing former students ask about when my wife runs into them. We don't know how old she is, but box turtles can live to 100, so we've informed our daughter that she'll inherit our turtle if we pass before Gripper does. We've now run out of time for today's episode. I'm Diane Edelman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Reader's Digest is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.